Welcome to Sewindipity on naturechannel.fm. Join Shelley Levis, where she will explore gardening trends, homesteading techniques, and useful tips that will help your garden grow. Shelley will share the latest gardening gadgets on the market today, discuss eco-friendly gardening methods, and fun do-it-yourself projects that will have you thinking outside the pot. Special guests will reveal their gardening secrets and advice on how you can create a garden just about anywhere, whether it be a small urban balcony or a large open backyard. Gardening should be easy and gardening should be fun. Prepare to be inspired to get growing with Shelley Levis on Sewindipity here at naturechannel.fm.
Good afternoon, all you plant geeks, eco warriors, and gardenpreneurs out there. I hope you guys are having a wonderful day. You are listening to Shelley Levis here on Sewindipity on naturechannel.fm, and I am talking to you live from the Fraser Valley in beautiful British Columbia. We have had a lot of forest fires, and I had a few other notes that I wanted to talk to you guys about, you know, things that had happened this past week that were interesting and stuff. But you know what, I'm gonna hold off on all of that because this is a very big topic, and I realized as I was preparing my show notes for today that there's a lot to talk about when it comes to forest fires and understanding the devastation and the renewal that comes from the devastation afterwards. I'm from the Okanagan, and there's going to be a few people that are possibly listening in, so a big shout-out to my peeps out in the Okanagan. Adam, say hello, how are you doing? Charlotte, and all those girls and folks and family that are back there that could be listening in, because they are directly affected by the forest fires because they are burning literally all around them. Growing up in the Okanagan wasn't a surprise for me, I mean, to see smoke-filled summers. It was, you know, quite often that we had forest fires burning up all around us. And I've watched firsthand mountains burn right behind our home. And it's a devastating thing to see. And, you know, it's scary because it gets so close. And especially with our urban sprawl, we're getting so much more closer to the lines of the forest and pushing right into that territory that when a fire breaks out behind you, people lose their homes. And I'm not going to speak on that today because I personally have not been directly affected by a forest fire, haven't lost a home. And I can never possibly begin to speak from that experience. Only those that have gone through it know how much it's affected their lives. So I'm not going to go there. I'm going to talk about this topic from the point of view of being a gardener with a passion for planet Earth. And really what we're looking at when we see the devastation and what really happens afterwards. Now, a lot of people are saying that the reason why we're having such a huge amount of fires, the climate change folks that are out there and climate warming, people that believe that this is a result of that are saying that this is basically the beginning. Some of this stuff that we should be seeing in the next 30 years due to climate change. And this is just the very beginning of how it's going to progress. Now, there's a guy named John Innes, and he is the dean of the UBC's Faculty of Forestry, was speaking on the CBC News recently. And he's saying that this is the beginning of the climate change. We are seeing it in firsthand, but that the influences that are happening here in BC are very unique this year. Now, to date, since January, BC has seen a total of 1,343 fires. That is 297,000 hectares being burned up by fire. And on July 6th, there was a quote, and I don't know what the recent numbers are, but that BC had spent well over $80 million in fighting forest fires, and that's a ton of money. Now, I know that there has been one life lost due to forest fires because it was a tree topper, actually, that had fell. And other than that, there hasn't been any other reported human deaths as a result from direct forest fire activity. However, there's been a lot of other loss. Now, we are looking at climate change as part of the reason why. And we have a very unique situation this year because we have, it's kind of like the perfect storm, according to what John Innes is saying, is that, you know, we have the El Nino and the North Pacific Oscillation is also happening all at the same time, which causes a lot of really warm temperatures and like the warm, dry winter we just had. So we really have the makings for a really forest fire perfect, you know, environment in our forests. And what John was saying was that, you know, we can expect this to be the beginning of what's going to be a trend for a while. We're going to see this for a while. It's not going to be something that's just this year. We can expect that they're going to start earlier, they're going to last longer, and they're going to be more intense. And that's pretty terrifying for everyone involved that's watching our forest burn up. Now, the other thing, too, is that currently we have 166 fires burning in BC. Now, I can't speak to the rest of, you know, North America. I know they're all over the place, California, Alberta, and everywhere. Alaska's got many fires happening. I'm just going to concentrate on my province, which is 166 are burning right now. And that apparently is down from the 252 that were burning last week. And this was announced on the BC Wildlife Services on Monday. When we look at the devastation that's happening with our forest fires, it's really difficult. And I think what really, as a human, from our human perspective, what we're witnessing, what we're seeing, and what makes us so upset and sad was what we're seeing is that what we once knew as a lush, beautiful forest that was there, we're never going to see that again in our lifetime. 80 years is how long, you know, a forest would take, 80 years is our lifetime average span, you know, 80 to 90. And if you're really living right and you're eating your vegetables, so make sure you drink your water and eat your vegetables to reach that golden age. But the point is that that's relatively young in forest years. I mean, that's infant stage, really. I mean, that's a baby learning how to say its first words. It's barely starting to show any maturity at all. I mean, sure, we have a lot of lush green growth, undergrowth, but the conifers and stuff like that, they'll take a long time to grow to that magnificent forest we once know. And so I think this is part of the devastation, is that you can live your entire lifetime and never see that mountain that was behind you that burned to the ground fully rejuvenate. That is a sad thing for us in our small little blip on the planet. But the truth is life is there. And it is being reborn, and that species have survived, and the fungi and the fauna, they're all being renewed. We just, when we look up at that mountain and we see those black stalks left over of trees, we don't see the beauty that's actually happening beneath that. And I think that's pretty tough. I know when I was a little girl looking up and seeing the mountains on fire, they were just burning. I was in Vernon at the time. And if Charlotte, if you're listening in, I know that you've been sharing a lot of Facebook updates about the devastation that's happening in my hometown. And I remember just seeing that fire. It just burned and burned. You could actually see the flames that night sitting there. And I know that in Okanagan, that my sister who's there, she shares pictures, and all my family is. And at night, the scene is awesome and terrifying all at the same time. I know that the air quality, of course, is affected for everyone that is there, and you're having these dark orange sunsets every night, and it's hot and dry and smoky. So there's a lot of effect there. But I want to really just kind of dive right into what happens after a fire. What exactly goes on in our forests right after it's devastated like that? And to understand that this is a renewal process that has been going on since the beginning of the planet. This is not something that we should be completely upset by its devastation. We shouldn't just look at it and just see the aftermath as just being bad. We have to understand that there's a cleansing process that's necessary sometimes before us. Now, humans started, that's a whole other ball game, and I think it's wrong, and I don't think that people are careful enough, and we need to, there's no excuse for that. But you know, dry conditions and lightning, that's Mother Nature's doing, and we can't control that. And when things light up on fire and just completely combust at the rate that they do, there's a lot of reasons why, because that means our forest wasn't healthy. There wasn't enough diversity. There was infestations, especially like with the pine beetle that's happening all around my forest right now. Like we drive up the Coquihalla, and what was once a beautiful green forest in every direction, I've watched as the years go by, as more and more of it is overtaken by the pine beetle, which is destroying the forest. All the trees die, and they basically become these kindling, this orange-colored kindling that's just sitting there waiting to be burned down. Now, a lot of trees and a lot of plants, they actually require to go through a scarification process with heat and fire to actually scar and damage the seed pods in order for them to rejuvenate and become viable. And this is really common in certain areas that are used to having forest fires. There's certain areas that are not as vulnerable. I mean, you know, like you take the Arctic tundra or the alpine, they didn't need to adapt to forest fires because they simply just don't have that as a problem on a regular reoccurring basis or every, say, 80, 100 years. Whereas our plants a lot of the forests that are around my area, they have gone through this, and a lot of the pine forests, they have gone through this, and they actually have a kind of a built-in system to protect them for that. In fact, they actually need fire to rejuvenate themselves because of the types of seeds and plants that they have. Now, this isn't to say there isn't an effect on the wildlife, and there is definitely a huge effect on the wildlife that's in there. That are being, you know, exposed to the fires as they burn across their habitat. But there's also there too, we need to look at that and say, well, how many species are actually being affected? What is dying off? And that is, you know, can be controversial. Things like, I remember, you know, before I had a really good understanding of it all, that there's certain, you know, spiders and stuff like that, that, you know, they're living parts of our ecosystem that we haven't even discovered. You know, they're just out there. They still haven't even been discovered, and they're burning up. Maybe there's a type of, you know, a fungus out there, like a mushroom, where penicillin was discovered and is actually gone now because of a forest fire. And I used to think in those ways of how devastating this could be to the environment. But I've slowly changed my thinking on that, realizing that this is my experience in my little short lifetime here. And this forest has been through it, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of times in its existence here on the planet. And it's ready for this. It's kind of like, you know, a clock for them. Oh yeah, here we go. It's time to rebuild and renew ourselves. And this is how it goes. Now there's going to be lots of species that are vulnerable to this, and it does create an ecosystem chain as things, you know, certain species are affected. They are the, you know, the prey for the predators, and now the predators are looking for food as well. So it's quite, you know, an ecosystem that changes drastically, but it's not dead. And when we look up Erie Mountains and see the ghosts of what was, you know, a beautiful forest at one point, if you get an opportunity, I would urge you, if you live close to this, the very next year after a forest fire, go for a walk up into those mountains and start looking, and you will see the renewal, the beginnings of life already taking place. It happens almost immediately because a lot of things change in the environment that allow species that didn't survive well, certain plant species and stuff like that, now that the leaf canopy is gone, they can grow and thrive. And there's a process of renewal that begins. Now, certain vulnerable species such as mice and voles and ground nesters, they'll get wiped out because they don't really get to move very quickly and get onto a different area. And a lot of times they're more surface, you know, burns, and especially depends on how deep the burn is. I mean, some burns happen so fast and they move so quickly that they really don't affect roots that much. They just do a surface burn and they move on, and that's it. It's gone. But if it burns long and slow, it's a whole nother ball game, and it really affects a lot of, you know, vulnerable species such as the ground nesters, like the mice and voles. And, you know, mice have a good way of replenishing themselves pretty good. So, I mean, it's one of those things where you got to look at and go that, you know, it's not the hugest loss. They actually bounce back pretty quick in their numbers. But when we're looking at, you know, big, large animals, they move. They're quite mobile, and they can get out of the fire's way. So as we go into the next segment, I want to just dig really deep into some wildlife facts, things that we, when we look at the fire, we don't really think about the after effects that are really going on. And, you know, I want to just talk a little bit about that, because actually in my, you know, research today, it gave me a whole nother view of what I'm seeing when I look up at as a devastating forest fire, and realizing that life is there and that things do change and that sometimes it's for the good. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we get back, let's dive into that a little bit more and just see how much really is lost after a forest fire. Be right back.
You are listening to Serendipity with Shelley Levis on NaturesChannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at serendipity.com. Organic, loose leaf, and simply delectable. Prasanna Tea Company strives to help people find balance, connect, and live in wellness.
We source the finest tea leaves from pristine farms around the world and blend them with some of nature's purest gifts, creating unique infusions that are healthfully life-enhancing, blissfully aromatic, and positively delicious. Find us at PrasannaTea.com. Prasanna Tea. It's tea the way it should be. Start your week off in a beautiful way. Come to Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service for a powerful and beautiful eco-spiritual celebration where we honor and support ourselves through the reflection of nature. Join us every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here at natureschannel.fm. Visit thechurchofnature.org to find out more about Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service and the Church of Nature.
Pets share our day-to-day struggles, adventures, and special moments, and they love us unconditionally. For all these reasons and so many more, host Peggy Hoyt shares her extensive knowledge in estate planning to help you ensure a healthy and safe future for your pet. Tune in to All My Children Wear Fur Coats every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to natureschannel.fm, live talk radio that helps connect you more deeply with nature. Natureschannel.fm, it's where we grow. Join the Horse's Heart and Soul Herd and Sarah Willerson on natureschannel.fm Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern for horse wisdom straight from the stall. Horses are the heartbeat of the earth, and they help us attune our own hearts with our souls. They encourage us to remember that we are part of the harmonious flow that is nature. Tune in every Wednesday for horse wisdom shared straight from the stalls.
Nature's Channel is where you grow with amazing talk radio shows. We talk about animals and gardening, natural health and wellness. Listen live at Find Archives at natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to Serendipity with Shelley Levis on natureschannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at serendipity.com.
Welcome back to the show, folks. I am talking about forest fires and life that rises from the ashes. And I was just briefly saying before the break there, what species are being affected by this so that we get a really understanding. I mean, I remember thinking to myself, there was one horrific picture I saw, and I think that anybody from the Okanagan will remember this iconic photo. It was a deer standing in the middle of a water, she was in a river, and on all sides of her, the fire was blazing, like huge licks of flames all around her, and that was the only place that she could go to not be burned up. But she had found refuge in this cool water, even though the flames burned all the way around her. They do have an ability, the big species, to move. In fact, there was some notes made by Smith in 2000 about how they watched a Yellowstone fire, literally in Yellowstone Park, just consume areas like in massive hectares and numbers. And yet, big game, like the bison, they just kind of were indifferent. They literally were just grazing within 100 feet of this massive fire that's burning there. They just were indifferent to it. And if the flames started to move one direction, they moved the other. They were just really not affected by it. They have the ability to move. Now, where it becomes a big problem is in the nesting season. Now, this is the problem with it starting earlier. The more earlier and drier we are that these fires start, this can become a massive impact on certain wildlife that cannot move yet, like young nests of birds and babies that cannot fly yet, or young ground animals that are unable to leave the den because they're too small. This is where we're going to see some major dilemma and loss of life for small, you know, depending on year. So it's the time of year when it's done. But it also impacts other things like their foraging. You know, if it happens too early in the season, all that foraging that they would be doing on the wild, the plant life that's there, they'll lose it that year, which could be devastating. And if it happens at the end of the summer, quite often what will end up happening is for next year, if plants are too badly burned, they won't survive for next year. So this is the impact for foraging animals. There's also the fact that once you know, there's no shrubs and ground cover, we can have something that's called a snow crusting. Now, when the snow falls, usually it creates little pockets. You may understand that. You know, if it hits on a shrub, but right below it, it can be completely dry, which is where a lot of animals will find their homes. But it, with the crusting that ends up happening is that it can actually become just one sheer sheet, and especially with wind and any wet rain and stuff like that, it actually can become quite hard. So there's not really a way for even deers to break through that hard crusting of the snow to get to whatever plant life would be alive underneath. And this is another issue that we don't even think of, is that once that's not there, there's no canopy that kind of breaks up areas of no snow. So that can be a really big problem. But, you know, another side of that, though, is to look at the removal of, like, you know, forest litter. Sometimes leaves and stuff that fall down or trees that create, you know, barriers and they block certain areas, well, they get burned up. And an area that an animal couldn't get to before may be able to get to it now, or be able to find food in an area that, you know, because the ground litter was taken care of and burned off, they may be able to find something. Or yet again, seeds that were buried deep beneath that litter now have an opportunity to spring to life. So that's something to consider, you know, like that there's things getting burned out. It's like cleaning out the basement, you know, you're just taking care of getting rid of those things, and new pockets and spaces is formed. The other thing to think about is the leaf canopy. The leaf canopy is removed, you know, what would normally create massive amounts of shade in certain areas. Well, it's not there anymore. So lower ground cover actually can bounce back and become quite prolific the year after, which is for species of plants that haven't had a chance to really thrive in that area that also provide food for animals. So without that ground cover, there's that replenishing of plants and a balance that can begin. The other thing, too, is that with all the burning down, the soil is actually improved in our forests. And, you know, what ends up happening over time is big trees, they deplete the soils. I mean, we all know trying to grow plants underneath a cedar hedge, like there's just no nutrients there because they take it all. They take it all. And they take all the water that's there. So what ends up happening is trees that have established themselves, they're getting the lion's share of the nutrients, and nothing else is not really getting an opportunity to take care, advantage of the nutrients that are there. Soils become depleted. Plants get sick because they're not strong, or trees get sick because there's just nothing left. This is Mother Nature's way of basically composting everything and starting again. We need to look at it from that point of view. Now, when it comes to predator and prey, there is definitely an effect. Like if we lose a lot of smaller prey, such as voles and ground animals, larger predators that feed on them, this is where it becomes more of an issue for them, because they're unable to find food sources and they have to travel a little bit further to find them. But at the same time, too, birds' mortality rate is actually quite low, and it depends on the season. Like I said, if it's a nesting season, it's a problem. But if it's any other time, they actually can, the tree-living birds that nest in trees, they actually can move quite quickly and get out of the way. Ground nesters, however, are affected a little bit more because of the decline in insects, and their protective cover is gone. And so there'll be more of an effect. Now, I got all these facts that I found on www.agf.gov.bc.ca. You got to love government websites. You will never remember that site that I just told you. But just go to the BC government website and look up effects on forest fires, and it should lead you right there. But it was very interesting. It was a lot of really good facts telling me all about all the stuff that I read today. Now, there is different levels. They have fire adapted, fire dependent, and they name these for all the trees, the flora, the fauna, and birds and everything else, because each species has some degree of tolerance, and some of them are completely intolerant to forest fires. Some have adapted over time and are quite flexible. A good example of that is like highly flexible birds are like crows, ravens, and robins and waterfowl. They aren't specifically dependent, since they're more on ground cover in protection because they live higher up. And waterfowl, of course, they live on shade plants, most of it, and water-type plants, which are unaffected usually in fires. So they kind of, you know, it doesn't really affect them at all. Other ones that are more fire adapted, that actually have adapted to, you know, forest fires as it happens, are like the western bluebird. A lot of songbirds, actually, western bluebirds, vespers, Cooper's hawk, they actually nest in dead trees. They look for these dead trees and these rotting trees out, and this is where they nest. So once a forest fire has left a tree that looks devastated to us, we see it as devastation. They look at it like, awesome, we just have a whole new townhouse complex being built here in this big open field. It's perfect. So for them, they move right in, and they start the balance in the ecosystem all over again just through them. And then there's other birds, in fact, that are completely fire dependent. They actually need that fire to happen on the ground level so that that they can live in the renewal that will take place, such as the blue grouse, sandhill, crane, and wild turkeys. So there's some examples of how different birds have adapted to, you know, what we think is a devastated area. To them, it's not. It's actually, you know, a renewal for them, a place to build homes. And when we look at it from that point of view, rather than seeing just all loss, we start to realize that, okay, well, this is an ecosystem that's balancing itself. And it's important for us to understand that these things do need to happen ever so many years in order for things to kind of straighten itself out, because things, certain species, like we were talking about earlier with the pine beetle, they can move in and take over. Now, the pine beetle is a good example of the forest, like I was saying before the break there, of how it's killing our forest. Like, our forest just look like, you know, kindling. As far as you can see, orange kindling, dead sticks standing there waiting for the first lightning strike. And, you know, the reason why this pine beetle has gotten it so out of control, a lot of people would, again, blame this on climate change. And the reason why is that they need two things kill a pine beetle: severe cold and severe heat. Well, we're not getting that cold anymore, guys. And the winters are so darn mild that these things are thriving. It's like nothing is taking them out. So there's only one other option to stop them, and it's fire. So we can look at that and just say it's a cleansing process. The fires are, the forests are dead up there, folks. There's nothing, no life happening there. It needs to burn up, and it needs to start again. And especially when we start looking at the trees and stuff like that that need to be scarified for their seed pods and the cones in order for them to be viable again, we absolutely do need that fire to whip through that area, clean it up, and get those trees started. Mother Nature is going to take care of it for us, as devastating as it may appear to us at the time that it's happening. Now, when we come back from the break in a few minutes here, I'm going to get a little bit more into how it changes the ecosystems. We've talked a little bit about how it affects wildlife, but how does it really overall affect the whole entire ecosystem, plants and trees and stuff like that? Like, what actually happens in what stages? And we're going to talk a little bit about that when we get back from the break. But I hope that that through this process of listening to what I have to say today, that you maybe see the forest fires not as complete devastation, but as renewal. Everything has to be torn down in order to start again. We do this in our cities all the time. I mean, we walk over and say, that old building is decrepit, it's falling apart, rip it down and start something new. And from that, new life can be breathed into an area. And I've witnessed that firsthand, even in certain parts of Vancouver, where an area was basically, you know, considered the slums, has been taken back and has a healthy economy with good stores and everything else. And this really is relative, because it literally had to be torn down to the base floor to be rebuilt and back up again. And that is a product of time. And so, unfortunately, our lifetimes, we're not going to be able to see all of that happening, but it does happen immediately if you really got up there and got up close and really experienced life from the ground level. So when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about the ecosystems. This is where it gets really interesting, how fire actually spurs new growth. And this is the part that I love, because it's all about, you know, the amazing world and craziness of how plants have adapted. We'll be right back, guys. See you in a sec.
You are listening to Serendipity with Shelley Levis on NaturesChannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at serendipity.com.
Organic, loose leaf, and simply delectable. Prasanna Tea Company strives to help people find balance, connect, and live in wellness. We source the finest tea leaves from pristine farms around the world and blend them with some of nature's purest gifts, creating unique infusions that are healthfully life-enhancing, blissfully aromatic, and positively delicious. find us at PrasannaTea.com. Prasanna Tea. It's tea the way it should be. Start your week off in a beautiful way. Come to Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service for a powerful and beautiful eco-spiritual celebration where we honor and support ourselves through the reflection of nature. Join us every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here at natureschannel.fm. Visit thechurchofnature.org to find out more about Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service and the Church of Nature.
Pets share our day-to-day struggles, adventures, and special moments, and they love us unconditionally. For all these reasons and so many more, host Peggy Hoyt shares her extensive knowledge in estate planning to help you ensure a healthy and safe future for your pet. Tune in to All My Children Wear Fur Coats every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to natureschannel.fm, live talk radio that helps connect you more deeply with nature. Natureschannel.fm, it's where we grow.
Join the Horses, Heart, and Soul Herd and Sarah Willerson on natureschannel.fm Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern for horse wisdom straight from the stalls. Horses are the heartbeat of the earth, and they help us attune our own hearts with our souls. They encourage us to remember that we are part of the harmonious flow that is nature. Tune in every Wednesday for horse wisdom shared straight from the stalls.
Nature's Channel is where you grow with amazing talk radio shows. We talk about animals and gardening, natural health and wellness. Listen live at Find Archives at natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to Serendipity with Shelley Levis on natureschannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at serendipity.com.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Shelley on Serendipity on natureschannel.fm. I hope everybody's doing a good out there today. I'm chatting to you today about the devastation of forest fires, or is it really? I mean, we've learned that life, you know, grows out of the ashes and things bounce back after a forest fire. And, you know, I was saying before that Arctic tundra areas and alpine areas, they didn't need to adapt to this, but certain forests, especially around here in the interior of BC, definitely had to, because it has been, you know, the Okanagan in certain areas is considered desert. It's quite dry. It's not the first time it's been through this party. It's been through this many, many times in lifetimes that we could never even imagine. And, you know, we get used to our surroundings and we think that this is the way it's always been or always should be. Well, you know, we're just a blip. We're just a little tick in time on this planet, and things are constantly evolving. This is normal, and this happens. The global change, of course, is going to exasperate the situation, and that's another whole topic. And we won't go there. We're just going to stick with this, what's going on right now, the life after the fire. Now, certain things, like, for instance, let's take a Douglas fir. The pitch on this Douglas fir is so extremely flammable. As soon as it gets the fire hits it, it ignites like a torch. So Douglas firs will literally just go up like little torches, boom, 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 immediately, and just kind of literally explode because they're so flammable, which really exasperates in windy conditions and why fires so quickly can get out of control. But, you know, like I was saying that, you know, we have to recreate the habitat. Sometimes it needs to be done, like I was saying with the pine beetle, and plants need to have heating and scarring in order for it to happen. These are called serotonous cones. Now, serotonous cones, so good examples would be lodgepole pines, knob pine, jack pine, and cypress. These are all types of trees that have serotonous cones that need to be scarified by fire in order for them to be viable. In fact, some seeds can last and not ever actually sprout for 80 to 100 years, especially for knob pines. And you got to think about that. They've actually got a time limit on them. They are used to going through 80 to 100 year periods waiting for the next fire to come along. So it's happened a few times. The planet got programmed. It learned how to adapt for when the next time the fire happens. Now, of course, depth of fire can affect seeds and roots as well. The deeper, the harder the burn is, the more roots are affected. But certain roots are not affected at all, like if it burns quite quickly, and it's not very long after that that new water shoots will shoot up from those roots and start to grow. Now, they figure that it's, you know, there's just disparaging, you know, conflict about this, that it takes, you know, anywhere from 45 degrees Celsius to 60 degrees Celsius to kill tissue. But it really, really is dependent on bark thickness. The more thicker the bark, the more it can survive. And also growing points. Like along branches, there's these little leaf nodes. Now, certain leaf nodes will get burnt back, but, you know, in certain trees, and I've talked about this in pruning, you know, habits and, you know, crimes against horticulture when people prune really badly. But the fact is that when you prune back to the next viable leaf node, then what ends up happening is it triggers the plant to grow from that spot. And that actually can happen quite often when just outside of the tree was burned really quickly. those viable leaf nodes, they've been sitting there waiting to just bounce to life, and they bounced back no problem. Now, recolonizing of a very devastated area really starts from the ground up and in a very unique way. And this is why I say go for a walk into those forests afterwards. Go the next year and just look at the little beginnings, the stirrings of life, the whole beginning of a new ecosystem. It starts with the mosses and the liverworts. And their goal is to start covering the ground, and which holds the moisture in. What ends up happening is that sometimes after a major forest fire, okay, there's no trees and branches that'll help with stop soil erosion or hold the water in place so that the surface of the soil becomes quite hydrophobic, meaning that it doesn't matter if it rains, it'll just run off it like it any like a water on the back, the water on a duck's back, and it'll just, you know, sheet away. And then so things like mosses and liverworts, they start to grow and they start holding on to that moisture. They also accumulate drifting organic matter, you know, leaves that are flying through the air and stuff like that. It kind of gets trapped around these little plants on the ground, and it helps to create and build up the organic matter in that area. So those are the first plants you're going to see that start to start the renewal process. Following that is when we start seeing the wildflowers and the grasses. And they'll start popping up everywhere because the seeds have been carried by wind and are quite viable, some certain species especially, and we'll get into that in the next segment. But, you know, they start to come back, and then they start to create the ecosystem, which is where all the birds and small, you know, ground life starts to be able to find their ecosystem there. Following that, then you get the deciduous shrubs and trees. And then after that, of course, the conifers, which are the big giants of the forest, and they come last because they are the slowest growers to get going and put on size. Now, in between all this, this is where the ecosystem, this is where it gets interesting, because, you know, we get patchy birch stands and little patches of spruce, that creates a diverse habitat. And these plants, a lot of times, don't get an opportunity to really establish themselves, you know, because they become underneath the canopy of these massive, gigantic conifers. And so there's no real deciduous material there. It just becomes a coniferous forest. This is why it's so important to have this kind of a burn happen, because it starts to introduce back all the life that is required, or that requires to have a deciduous type of plant to survive. And you got to think of things like berries and tree fruit and stuff like that happen that keep a good balance of ecosystem there. Nesting habitat. So, you know, you get all these stands that happen in there. Now we're getting a diversity in our forest. And it's like anything that's monoculture. A monoculture is a death sentence of any type of plant, because if a disease spreads in one area, it takes out everything. And fields and farmers know this. A disease spread in one part of your orchard or your farm can easily become completely out of control if everything you grow is exactly the same and susceptible. Hence the reason why we have a pine beetle infestation destroying our forests. Had we had more diversity up there, they wouldn't be as bad. You know what I mean? Like there would be more different types of trees, different types of conifers that wouldn't be affected. So this is what we have to look at, is that this is Mother Nature's way of just, you know, peppering a new ecosystem and balancing things out, because after the 200 years of no forest fire, it just became depleted and is no longer a vital area for growth and for balance. So when we look at those kind of things, we realize that the importance of how a forest fire would start to recolonize and start the renewal process. Now, you know, things like certain things like with the plants, especially flowers, wildflowers and stuff like that, that start to recolonize, they're moved by wind. Like there's severe winds that happen when we have a forest fire because of the drafts and the heat. And it actually carries them to new areas that they couldn't get to before. They'll move through wind, and they'll move through flooding that's due to erosion. Erosion that is able to quickly, swiftly move over a landscape that it couldn't do that before, or finds another way of traveling down a mountainside, now carries with it spores for mushrooms and all sorts of different things that would into a new area that otherwise never had them. And this has a spreading of life itself across a mountainscape, which is fantastic when you really think about it, because that's how they could, you know, recolonize a whole new area and create a diversity. Now, certain plants that have adapted are actually called pyrophytes. That's what they are. They're fire-adapted traits known as pyrophytes, and these guys actually rely on fire to get themselves around. And this is what why I say I look at the world of plants and flora and fauna, and to me, I think it's absolutely fascinating. You know, when people think that they're not intelligent, I think you're wrong. They're the only species that doesn't have a brain and two legs, and they've managed to figure out how to get across the street. Okay, I'm sorry, this is pretty smart if you ask me. And so, you know, they actually this is where they come alive, and they actually require this forest fire devastation. Like, for instance, horsetail. Oh my gosh. Horsetail. Everybody hates it, but you know what? The truth is, it is so adapted that it can survive fire, no problem. And it just pops. It's one of the first plants, to our chagrin, to pop up all over the place, because it can. Its roots run long and they run pretty deep, and they're able to just pop up and renew themselves, no problem. But I mean, this is why this plant has been around since the dinosaurs. Literally, the dinosaurs were treading on horsetail. So it's one of the longest species of plants on the planet, because it has been, I mean, I guess, almost too well adapted to all the changes that always do happen. You know, when we look at certain things, there's so, you know, a mountain can spring to life. I remember when I was going through the Yukon, I went and did, moved up there for a little while, because I have to see all the pretty places in BC. I'm kind of an addict that way. And when I was driving through there, there was a mountain fire that happened just the year prior, and it was black. It was black. Like, it was just, you know, charcoal. And just, it looked kind of eerie. What was fascinating about it, though, is that fireweed had popped up everywhere, and it's this bright pink flower. And so it was such a contrast of this black landscape that looked, you know, eerie and broken and, you know, just weird, ghosts of trees standing there. And yet this gorgeous pink flower for miles, like miles that you could see in rolling hills, had filled it, and it was absolutely fascinating and absolutely gorgeous. So even in all the ugly, there was something that was profoundly beautiful. And it makes you realize that, you know, life goes on, and that in the place of what was something that was supposed to be seen as a devastation, something beautiful can come from that. And it happens all the time. So this is one of those things, if there's a new fire that's happened, look for the fireweed. It's one of the first beautiful flowers that will come up, and looks amazing over the landscape. Now, the other thing, too, is certain types of mushrooms will come up, like the morel mushrooms. This one I want to talk a little bit about, because I know that when I was up north, we had morel mushrooms that were popping up. And this is a big, as soon as a fire happens, all the, you know, organic mushroom pickers are out there. They move to that area. They cannot wait to pick that area, because the year after a forest fire has happened, these morel mushrooms pop up everywhere. And they're very distinct. You can't really mistake them from anything else. And they are highly prized by a lot of Germans, actually. When I was up there, I met so many German tourists that were out picking morel mushrooms and looking for the last year's burns. They actually study the maps to learn where was last year's burns, to go and get these delicacies, these little mushrooms that pop up everywhere. And that's because the ecosystem is just right. They love that highly nitrogen-rich soil. So many good things, both food and beautiful flowers, pop up out of this devastation, and it actually becomes kind of a feeding frenzy for both humans and animals that are absolutely after these beautiful things. We're going to take one more break here, guys, and then we're going to finish up in the last little bit with a few other little points about beautiful flowers that'll pop up and the life that happens after a fire. Be right back.
You are listening to Sewindipity with Shelley Levis on NaturesChannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at sewindipity.com.
Organic, loose leaf, and simply delectable. Prasanna Tea Company strives to help people find balance, connect, and live in wellness. We source the finest tea leaves from pristine farms around the world and blend them with some of nature's purest gifts, creating unique infusions that are healthfully life-enhancing, blissfully aromatic, and positively delicious. Find us at PrasannaTea.com. Prasanna Tea. It's tea the way it should be. Start your week off in a beautiful way. Come to Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service for a powerful and beautiful eco-spiritual celebration where we honor and support ourselves through the reflection of nature. Join us every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here at natureschannel.fm. Visit thechurchofnature.org to find out more about Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service and the Church of Nature.
Pets share our day-to-day struggles, adventures, and special moments, and they love us unconditionally. For all these reasons and so many more, host Peggy Hoyt shares her extensive knowledge in estate planning to help you ensure a healthy and safe future for your pet. Tune in to All My Children Wear Fur Coats every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to natureschannel.fm, live talk radio that helps connect you more deeply with nature. Natureschannel.fm, it's where we grow.
Join the Horses, Heart, and Soul Herd and Sarah Willerson on natureschannel.fm Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern for horse wisdom straight from the stalls. Horses are the heartbeat of the earth, and they help us attune our own hearts with our souls. They encourage us to remember that we are part of the harmonious flow that is nature. Tune in every Wednesday for horse wisdom shared straight from the stalls.
Nature's Channel is where you grow with amazing talk radio shows. We talk about animals and gardening, natural health and wellness. Listen live at Find Archives at natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to Sewindipity with Shelley Levis on natureschannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at sewindipity.com.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Sewindipity live on natureschannel.fm. I'm your host, Shelley Levis, talking to you live from the Fraser Valley in beautiful British Columbia, Canada, which is burning up right now with forest fires. Things, I guess, are a little bit down from last week, but that can change in a heartbeat. We all know that. One thunderstorm away, and we can have all sorts of fires that can be immediately ignited. Now, I was just chatting about, before the break, certain plants that actually, you know, come back and bounce back right away after a fire and is, you know, considered in abundance after a forest fire, in fact. You know, ceanothus, which is a California lilac, it is a small shrub that actually needs fire to rejuvenate because it has a short life. And it gets kind of burnt out and leggy over time. So it actually requires the forest fires to come through or quick shrub fires just to rejuvenate the plants, take out what's there so that they can, you know, restart. Ground pinks are beautiful little pink flowers that cover ash-covered slopes, and they'll be everywhere after a forest fire the year after. And same with fire poppies, especially in California. Fire poppies are quite common to pop up right after a forest fire. Other things like the scarlet larkspurs, they'll pop up as well right after a forest fire. So, I mean, even though you have this black landscape, you could have actually a lot of really beautiful color quite magnificently against that stark contrast. And other things like certain blueberries and lindenberries and stuff like that, they pop up right away and start recreating the ecosystem for all of the nesting birds that'll move into that area now that they have this exposure to the sun, because they just wouldn't grow there before. They couldn't grow there in this open field simply because of the leaf canopy cover. So there's a lot of things to take into consideration that, you know, maybe you never thought of it that way. Perhaps you just kind of looked at it, and just when you look up at that mountain full of all these ghostly dead black trees, you see death. And And the truth is it's not. It's actually a whole ecosystem repairing itself and rebuilding itself from the ground up. And it's supposed to. It's supposed to, because that's how things are healthy. It had to get cleaned. It had to come back. I think it's what, like I was saying before, the hardest part as the observer, as the human having the perspective, looking at something like that, and we see this devastation, the hardest part for us to grasp is that we mourn the view that we had. We mourn what was there. And we also mourn for the tomorrows of all the tomorrows. We're not going to ever see it again. And in our lifetime, you're right, in our short little ticking time here on the planet, we will not see that forest for what it was for a long time. We won't see it in our life, or we won't see it in our lifetime. We'll see some renewal and growth. And, you know, over the years, we'll see it get greener and greener if you stay and live in the same area of the devastation. But you're never going to see it at what it was. And maybe what it was wasn't that healthy to begin with. So, you know, accepting that and realizing when you see a burn, as ugly as it is, there is life there. And I encourage you to go up there and start looking for those first little signs. Look for those mosses and all of that liverwort that I was talking about. And once you start seeing it growing across the rocks, and then take a look at those dead, those trees that look like, you know, standing black stalks of nothing. Look closer. Is there a bird living there? I mean, seriously, is there a little family of birdlies that are living there? I mean, you might look at that and not see it for this devastated, you know, charcoal bit that's there anymore. You might actually see it as it became a home for a whole species that absolutely thinks it's fabulous. They don't see anything wrong with it at all. In fact, they love the fact that they can stand at the top of their home and look for miles and see food in every direction because of all the shrubs that are growing there that never once did because of tree canopy. There's a whole new fresh wildlife that begins in a new habitat that will last for generations, for many generations, that begins after a fire. And as much as it's hard for us to look around, and I mean, I have a perspective because this is how I look at things. I see the death and the renewal of Mother Nature. I'm a seasonal girl, and I see it from the time that a seed comes up out of the ground to the flower that wilts away to the, you know, the time I'm tossing it into the compost. I see that this cycle happen every time I put in a plant in the ground. And so for me, the beginning of life, the renewal and the change is something that I fully accept. And when I look at the forest fires, as much as I'm devastated to see how ugly it might look, I also know that life is there, that there are stirrings of a whole new ecosystem, and especially with the forests that we have that are devastated right now. I've said devastated lots. I mean, I'm going to go back and count how many times I've said devastated in this radio show. I mean, if somebody was keeping track, please let me know, because I'm sure it's well over 100. Now, we'll try to find another word. How about badly affected? I don't know. But the point is that don't see it that way, guys. I mean, I know that it's really hard for people that are here in BC to watch our forests burn, and it's sad, and it's heartbreaking. And I can't, again, speak for those folks that may have lost their home in all of this. You know, that is a whole nother ball game. Their experience is unlike anyone else's, and only they can relate to that. So I won't speak on that. But I can say that the forest that was behind them, it will rebuild just like they will rebuild too. Sometimes everything has to come to the ground and everything has to be pulled apart and with a clean slate in order to put all the pieces back together in a better, more improved way. So I hope you guys really enjoyed this show, and I hope that for you folks that are dealing with forest fires that are burning around you right now, that you look at it in a different way and try to see that there is a light there, that there is a renewal process happening. This is natural. Mother Nature is doing her job. And you are just being able to, if anything, be lucky to witness it. Next week, we're going to be chatting with Stephen from Earthworm Technologies. He is, they've got a product out there where they basically taking bio waste and turning it into organic food and seeds and everything else that for the environment. And I think this is a fabulous company. So for all you gardenpreneurs out there and organic eco warriors, you're going to love that show. So make sure you tune in next week at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and check out some of the recipes I've been posting this week. I got a cucumber basil mojito on the blog. I just posted it today. It's delicious and it's perfect refreshing summer drink, garden to glass beverage that you and your friends will enjoy. Hope you guys enjoyed the show and have a great week, and we will talk to you next week. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
for listening to Sewindipity on naturechannel.fm. Visit sewindipity.com and join our free email list for updates on shows, links to fun DIY projects, and helpful tips to help your garden grow. See you next week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And remember, gardening is easy, gardening is fun.